Stephen Johnson grew up in Washington, D.C.
I always liked to write. When I was in third grade, I wrote a bunch of stories. My dad was like, this kid could be a writer. When I was around a teenager, I knew I wanted to be a writer. I kept changing what kind of things I was going to write. But I was kind of committed to being a writer from about when I was, 14 or 15.
Johnson studied literature in undergraduate school at Brown and through graduate work at Columbia.
I had this kind of split existence for a while where I was very interested in technology and, and was interested in what was starting to happen with the internet. This is the early 90s, so the web didn't even really start to kind of appear on my radar until 94. But I was really interested in computing and technology and all that stuff. And yet at the same time, I would go back and be, reading Middlemarch and Bleak House. and for a while, it was almost like I had these two lives. And then I started to kind of connect them and think about, I was interested in literature as kind of an historical, as a way of understanding society. And understanding, for instance, in the 19th century, what the city was doing to the experience of being human. And suddenly people were living in these huge cities that didn't exist before. And the Industrial Revolution was, of course, changing society in all these ways. And so the novel was a way of understanding those changes. And then I began to realize, that same question is just as interesting and just as relevant, except now it's the digital technology and it's the network technology that's, reshaping society.
While at Columbia, Stephen Johnson and a colleague created the first online-only, no-print-equivalent magazine, Feed. And Johnson had something of an epiphany the night before the Wall Street Journal ran a major article about Feed.
And I knew that that morning a million people were going to read about our magazine and all come to look at it online. So I was staying up late in the night to upload this kind of new set of articles, and I had this image of like, wow, this is amazing. There's this huge institution of a big national newspaper, and there are trucks all over the country that are taking this physical printed paper to people's doorsteps and with news about my website. And then here's me in my kitchen, like uploading this content to my, to my website. And it's just me. I don't have any trucks. I don't have anything. And it was a great feeling of, the kind of new power that the internet was going to unleash, where just individuals would suddenly have a soapbox that they could stand on that could potentially rival that of something like the Wall Street Journal.
And when organized along the web model of peer-to-peer networks, Stephen Johnson argues in Future Perfect, actually build big things and solve big problems.
Now we can point to the internet and we can point to the web and we can point to Wikipedia and all these other achievements and we can say, actually, you can build big things. And in all these cases, the kind of form of organization that turned out to be the best was not a traditional big government agency, and it was not a big private corporation either. It was this peer network structure. And so the big proposition of the book is, what else can peer networks do? And what kind of political philosophy do we have if we think that peer networks are, increasingly important in solving the issues of our day?
Stephen Johnson coins the term peer progressives for the growing cadre of people convinced of the power and possibilities inherent in peer-to-peer network approaches to dealing with a wide range of political, social, cultural, and economic problems, and defines diversity as a key component of peer progressive philosophy.
The big point here is this is not the old multicultural argument for diversity, which is a wonderful argument, not taking anything away from it, but it's not the argument that we want to have diversity so that we will be more tolerant as a society. It's that when groups come together with different points of view, particularly different kind of professional points of view and fields of expertise, and try and solve a problem as a group, there's a tremendous amount of research that shows that smarter but like-minded groups do not perform as well as less smart, more diverse groups. So if you've got, higher IQ people who all work for the same company or work in the same field, they won't do as well at solving problems as a more diverse, interesting group, even though they might have lower IQ. That's a big principle for the peer progressives, is to create environments where there's more kind of diverse perspectives, kind of coming to the problems that we solve.
Stephen Johnson, author of the very interesting and provocative new book, Future Perfect, The Case for Progress in a Networked Age. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.